Yes, welcome back to the final show of the week here on World Football Daily. Absolutely delighted to have our next guest on the show today, a man who was camped out at Queen's Park Rangers all day yesterday, working very, very hard with all the stories flying around. Mr. Aidan McGee of Sky Sports News joining us on the show now. Aidan, how are you, mate, today?
Yeah, I'm good, thanks, Oliver. What about yourself?
Very well indeed. Happy 2013 to you as well, mate. I know it's February, but it still feels like we should do the New Year's greeting. It's your first time on the show this year.
Still early in the year, isn't it? Why not?
You had a very busy day down at Loftus Road yesterday. First and foremost, explain what it was like covering this whole Peter Odemwenge saga yesterday.
Well, I'll tell you what, I was actually in Manchester the night before, just waiting to hear where I was going to be. So I was quite surprised to be at QPR because, as I said, I've only been at Sky Sports News nearly a year. So it was quite a decent gig to get because they knew that it would be quite busy. So anyway, I was going to go and stay at a hotel in Oxford, which is probably about 2 hours down to London from towards London from Manchester. I was going to stay in a hotel and do the final hours of the QPR training ground in the morning. And then I realised I'd actually left my suit in South London, which meant going 4 hours to South London from Manchester and then about an hour in the morning back to the training ground. So I only had about 3 hours sleep. And I got to see QPR's training ground at about 5:20, and I was live on air at 6. And as I say, we knew that we had, you know, we were going to expect a busy day. And soon enough, after doing a few broadcasts, the players started turning up, maybe about 9 o'clock, 9:30 for training. Harry turned up. We did our customary interview through the window of his car. And they say that the transfer window never shuts until Harry does the window up on his 4x4. So, but he was actually opening it, so we could say he was opening the window when he wound it down and spoke to us. So we got a chat there. He said he wasn't too optimistic of doing too many deals, but he did say that Chris Samba was quite close. They had the medical on Wednesday night in London after he'd flown over from Russia, because remember he played for Angie under Goose Hibbing. So that one was close. That was done probably by about 10:30. So that was in the bag, and the rest of it was just, I mean, we had a situation where Andros Townsend of Tottenham, who later did sign in the evening, went for a medical about 6 miles away from where the training ground is, and he was told before even having the medical that the deal was off. So it was QPR who called out. Now, at the time, they were in for three Tottenham players, and my understanding is that Tottenham had said you could either have all three players, that is Bentley, Genus, and Townsend, or none at all. So and two of those would have had to have been permanent deals, because you can only loan one player from one club. So there was the first bit of entanglement. It just got worse as the day went on. They did eventually sign Genus in the evening, and they did eventually sign Townsend. Bentley didn't get his wish for a move to QPR, so he stayed at Tottenham. But then, having already signed Samba for around about £12 million, I mean, you know, the wages weren't quite as high as were reported. There were reports in the middle of the day that it was £100,000 a week. Obviously, they were looking for Peter Crouch as well. £5 million bid went in for him the night before. And Stoke knocked it back. We believed that the clubs weren't too far off evaluation. But then Tony Pulis of Stoke decided that he just didn't want to sell him. So then, by mid-afternoon, all attention had been switched to Peter Odemwingie, who, you know, kind of has been talking and tweeting himself out of love with West Brom over the last week or so. So Harry thought it was a good deal to do. QPR made us an improved offer of about £3 million. Now, I got a call from the office saying that Odemwingie had said his goodbyes at the West Brom training ground, which is probably about a 2 hours, 20 minutes drive from where QPR is in West London. He said his goodbyes, as he said this morning to us, an exclusive interview with one of our reporters, Dharmesh Sheth. He said, I said my goodbyes. I was prepared to forego my bonus because of £300,000, which he'd achieved or he'd earned because of the number of points West Brom had got by this stage of the season. He was prepared to forego that, give it back to them. He said goodbye to all the people in the laundry room and the staff. He signed autographs, promised all the rest of the players, their teammates, that they'd go out for dinner quite soon. And he drove down to QPR believing that he'd been given permission by Dan Ashworth, the technical director of West Brom, to come and speak to QPR. So I was outside Loftus Road by this point. I'd moved from the training ground, which is probably about 10 miles away from the stadium, about half an hour drive, because that's where we understood the best of the action was going to happen. And then, to my astonishment, Peter Odemwingie turned up at Loftus Road at around about 7:45 in the evening with his agents. And I actually reported at first that he'd gone inside. And that got QPR's backs up, because he said, look, he hasn't actually been inside. And you saying that we've been inside implies that we haven't talked to him. So I quickly corrected that. And then he, as far as he knew, just drove away. QPR wouldn't allow him in the building. not because they didn't want to sign him, but just because they, as I said before, they didn't want to show him a West Brom a lack of respect because they hadn't even given him permission to speak. So off he went. He was at large. We had all sorts of reports that he was in Burger King or KFC or McDonald's or whatever. But one thing was certain at that stage, he wasn't coming to QPR. So that's how it was eventually played out. And the other 3 or 4 hours then ticked down to the window. And I spoke to Harry Redknapp at the end, and we'd had our own problems in the evening because we had some idiots behind us jumping around and swearing behind while we were doing the broadcast. And I had to apologise on air, and QPR kindly allowed myself and the BBC and Premier League Productions to come inside so that we were free of those kind of distractions, because obviously the financial penalties of us not being able to handle people jumping around the background can be quite severe. It's not a risk we can really take. So disappointingly, because most of the time in these situations the fans make it, but these QPR fans let themselves down, unfortunately. So we went inside and we did the broadcast for about the last 3 hours from there, and then just waiting and waiting, and still no sign of Odin Wingie. Still no sign that QPR were going to complete a deal. They've been linked with other players during the day, but it got to about 11:30 after the deadline had come and gone. Harry Redknapp came down. I did a live broadcast with him, a live two-way interview on Sky Sports News. And when you've been around the manager even for a few days, or even been covering his press conferences for the best part of 10 years as I have, you can sense when the body language of a manager is different to normal. And I sense he was a little bit disappointed, not because of the business he'd done. I think he was happy with the players he'd got. I just felt that he needed a striker. He bought Loic Remy earlier in the window, but I think he wanted someone to supplement that, because unless he gets Bobby Zamora fit, he's really light in that area, because Andrew Johnson is not going to come back till probably about April, May time. So he needed an extra body in there, especially an experienced Premier League goal scorer like Odin Wingie. And at this stage, Odin Wingie was still nowhere to be seen. The deadline's passed. I presume he's on the way back to the West Midlands, and Harry couldn't hide his disappointment, really. And then we get the situation this morning where, obviously I should say as well, West Brom released a statement after Odin Wingie turned up at Loftus Road saying that they hadn't given him permission to speak to QPR. And so it created a difficult situation for everybody. And so I spoke to Harry this morning at 9:30, and I said to him, look, you know, this is the situation. Does this not show the futility of the transfer window? You've got a player who really wants to join you. You've got a player who you really want to sign. You've got a player who West Brom probably don't want now because he doesn't appear to want to play for them. He's burned his bridge with supporters. Yet the restrictions of the window mean that everybody has to end up dissatisfied. But he actually said, well, look, it's a month long. Why didn't we do the deal earlier? I think he was aiming a little bit of a dig at the QPR hierarchy there, because he felt that they probably could have acted a little bit quicker. But as I say, they've got a big game against Norwich tomorrow, what we call a 6-pointer over here, a bit of a cliche, but it's very important that QPR win that, because if they don't, they're going to be really up against it. They're already 4 points off safety. So they have to go without him, and they move on. I think it very much becomes a West Brom story now, because they're the one who have to, as Kevin Peterson put on a tweet this morning, reintegrate the player back into the squad. It won't be easy.
I was going to say, it's going to be a very tough challenge indeed to integrate Peter Odemwenge back into that squad. Have you ever seen anything like this, especially when Odemwenge turned up? And the interview that I saw on Sky Sports, he used the phrase "we" describing him and Queen's Park Rangers a couple of times as well.
Yeah, I mean, I think it was just a case of, we're getting desperate now. I think the agent probably said to him, I don't know if this is certain, but he probably said to him, look, let's go down there and see what happens, see if we can force our way into the building and force this move. And he sounded confident. I mean, he was. It was almost as if he'd had some, not a big tat as such, but he had some information above him saying that look, the deal's done, come down and we'll sort it out. And he seemed very confident. So I spoke to him through his window. That's the only way we communicate with people during travel. Maybe it's called, that's what I'd call the transfer window. But yeah, we spoke to him. It wasn't just me, a couple of other people spoke to him as well. And he seemed very confident, very bright and ebullient. And, you know, he was, as far as he was concerned, he'd just come here to put pen to paper on a deal. So, I mean, I understand QPR. I mean, it wasn't a money thing. As I say, he was going to forgo his £300,000 bonus at West Brom. And also, QPR are only offering to take up the rest of his contract, his 18-month deal at West Brom. Probably given his age, it was a wise thing to do. QPR has thought about it for once, instead of throwing mud at the wall in the form of £50 notes and hoping some of it will stick. But they actually thought about this. They were going to take up the last 18 months of his contract, give him a slight increase, and then give him a bonus and an extra year if they stayed up. So it's very much incentivised and performance related. But as I say, it just didn't materialise. And, you know, yeah, in answer to your original question, I've never seen anything like that. I mean, obviously players turn up at clubs. It happened yesterday. Players turn up at clubs expecting a deal to be done. but not without permission having been given. A player can turn up at a club like DJ Campbell went to Blackburn last night, as did Jerome Thomas from West Brom. DJ Campbell was coming from QPR, ironically. And they turned up at Blackburn and the paperwork didn't go through. So, and I must also say as well, from West Brom's point of view, I mean, my understanding was that a deal was actually struck by about midday yesterday between QPR and Urban Wingie. And they said, look, you've got to loan, but West Brom said, we want to loan Junior Hoylett from you. And QPR said, okay, we're not against that. He's got dodgy hamstrings. He's not really performed that well this season. We'll be up for that. And then West Brom said, yeah, but you've got to pay all his wages. So Harry didn't confirm that this morning, but that was my understanding from a very good source yesterday. And that was what stopped the deal more than anything. And that's why Odin Wingie feels aggrieved, because he thinks that it was very unreasonable of West Brom to expect QPR to, you know, having moved the goalpost by saying we want this player on loan, to move the goalpost further by saying QPR have got to pay all his wages, which never happens, especially between two Premier League clubs. It was a bit, Odin Wingie feels a bit shortchanged, understandably, I think.
West Brom kind of taking the biscuit there from Queen's Park Rangers slightly. Aidan, just a last one. You know,
well, I think they knew. I think Oliver. I think they actually knew that QPR were desperate. They were absolutely desperate, and they were going to take a punt on someone who, well, he's proven in the Premier League, but he's 31. It takes time for any player of any age to integrate into the team. So I don't know. I mean, I think West Brom saw an opportunity there and thought they'd get. I mean, Junior Hoylett was very good for Blackburn last season. He just hasn't really done it for QPR. Maybe he just needed a more settled environment, but. It was very. I think that's why, as I say, that's why Odin Wingie feels as if he's been shortchanged.
Aidan, you know Queen's Park Rangers very well, and we'll get you out on this one quickly. You know the club. How important is it for them to stay up, considering the wages that some players are on? How bad would it be for Rangers if they went down, especially after? Okay, Samba's not on 100 grand a week, as you say, but he will be on good money there at Rangers, surely.
Well, there are some players there. I mean, despite what the clubs say, they claim they're not spending as much on wages as they were. But, I mean, there are still some really, really hefty earners there. And let's be honest, some average players as well. I mean, it seems strange that QPR would say that these players weren't on fantastic money when, all right, they didn't pay huge transfer fees. So, yeah, okay, so they can probably justify the expenditure on that basis because, I mean, I think they only spent about 12 million last summer. So compared to some clubs, it's not that much. If you said that your manager had... in the Premier League, had 12 million to spend. You'd say that was quite a modest budget in these times. But after the Newcastle game before Christmas, Harry Redknapp said that some of these players are earning far, far, far too much money. You've got Basinga is certainly on about £60,000 a week. Ned Manure, I understand, is on about 90, if my sources are correct. So I don't think Ned Manure is much better than an average Premier League defender. So I don't know how many of them have got relegation release clauses. I fancy not many of them, because if QPR really want the player, it's a clause they have to kind of just eke out of the contract. It seems common sense to put it in, but getting the player to actually sign it is a different matter entirely. So going down would represent a disastrous situation for QPR. They've thrown money at it. As to be fair to them, you know, I don't think they should be criticised for investing, but you've got to invest in the right way. There were no younger players coming through with something to prove. Most of the people we signed, I say we because it is my club, I've supported them for 28 years. Most of the players we signed were around 28, 29, 30, 31. Whereas, you know, any kind of progressive club in coming up from the Championship should be looking to sign players much younger than that and selling them and having a policy where, I mean, Crystal Palace back in the 90s when they were successful, finished third in the league, similar size club to QPR, they never used to buy a player over the age of 24. And they used to sell at 27 or above. So that would get most of the value. And hoping as well that in between time you gave good service to the club. And there was no strategy in there. It's literally buying players from agents. I'm not aware, I wasn't aware that, you know, until very recently they had a real proper scouting network, which is what Newcastle had. Newcastle have these days. They're able to get players from France. They seem to buy players from agents these days. And it's not a way to guarantee long-term success. But in short, it will be an absolute disaster, especially next season with the TV deals being so much bigger. The race, just being in the Premier League is worth about £100 million, even to a modest club like QPR.
Aidan, have they done enough to stay up in the transfer window? Is this squad good enough to keep them up? Yes or no?
It's best 11, yeah. You would think so. You would hope that Harry recovers to a more positive kind of body language and he's able to inspire these players. He's clearly has an excellent track record. Kevin Bond, very good coach alongside him there. They've got chief scout Steve Broomfield, who's out there kind of looking, maybe even looking into the loan market, see if they can get anything else from overseas, perhaps. Beyond that, I mean, they're going to have to go with what they've got. Nelson has left, but Samba will replace him. The goalkeeper started playing well, living up to his pedigree, Julio Cesar. It depends on the fitness of the other players. Bobby Zamora has to get back fit. And maybe someone like, people like Esteban Granero coming from Madrid in the summer, Samba Diakite signing permanently. It's time for those guys to step up because you can see they have outstanding quality, but for one reason or another, it just hasn't worked. And I think if you look man for man and look at the start of the season, would you take the QPR squad over the Norwich squad or even the Swansea squad? Mm. I think most managers would have picked more of our players than they would of those other teams. So, yes, it certainly seems like Southampton, Reading or Aston Villa, perhaps. And, you know, you're telling me there's not three teams worse than QPR in the league. If they can finish fourth and bottom, they'll consider that a major triumph along with gaining promotion in 2011. And then hopefully the club may be able to build from there on more sensible and firmer foundations in the future.
Well, let's hope for your sake and for theirs that is able to happen. Aidan, absolute pleasure to have you on the show. Fantastic job yesterday on Sky Sports News that you did. And we hope you get some rest before tomorrow's football kicks off, mate.
Yeah, well, I've got a big double bed next to me, so I'm about to dive into it. So I'll see you in about 12 hours.
Enjoy, mate. Take care and have a good afternoon. Aidan McGee of Sky
Sports. Thanks, all the best.
Aidan McGee of Sky Sports News joining us there on World Football Daily. The man who was encamped down at Loftus Road all day yesterday, telling us the fantastic tale of everything that took place down at Queen's Park Rangers yesterday. And he was, of course, at the heart of that Peter Odemwenge saga that took place today, yesterday, and will be carrying on today and over the weekend, of course, into next week. And West Brom, as I say, have to now reintegrate the player back into that squad. How difficult is that going to be? Very, if you ask me. We're going to take a very quick break here on World Football Daily. And when we come back, we're going to be talking to the man who knows everything about everything that's going on across European football, Mr. Andy Brassel, joining us next here on WFD.